Hello everyone, Tim here for the brief editing note. We lost half of the podcast for some reason. Our backups didn't work, the microphone didn't connect, whatever. In any case, we were kind of jammed for time, and there wasn't much time left before the Sweden game, but we managed to salvage the files of our answers to the Patreons and our last calls. So we're just going to wing it. No music version this time. We're just going to go right into the questions. And pretend the first half of the podcast is us saying wonderful things about Korea and terrible things about Sweden, obviously. And hopefully you get to listen to this before the game. And if not, you can laugh at how we were completely wrong after the game. So thanks for your indulgence, and we'll do better next time. Sorry about that.
Welcome back to the Korean Football Podcast. Once again, I'm Tim Lee, joined by Rory Gay, Michael Welch, and Jinsuk Yang. And so this is the part of the podcast where we go through the Tavern Mailbag. These questions were actually submitted by our patrons, and I want to shout out some of our higher level patrons, the Red Devil and Tigger Warriors, level patrons who have very generously donated to the Tavern, helped keep the lights on, and support Korean football writing from the bottom of our hearts to everyone who's donated, even those we're not going to shout out now. For all
yeah.
Those who have donated, retweeted, shared, given us some love, even though you can't donate, for everybody who reads our website, thank you so much.
Yes. 고맙습니다.
감사합니다, for sure. Alright, so here are the... So we just want to give a special shout-out, rather, to 9 very special patrons. Lion Lee, Joshua Lee, Bobby Kim, Sam Hong, Glenn Jung, Namu Yoon, Joshua Kim, Andrew, and Tamash Danichek, actually 10 patrons, and David Yoon. Thank you all for donating generously to the Tavern. You guys are the best.
Here, here.
And
yep.
Accordingly, we've asked them some questions. About the Sweden match, and perhaps even a little bit more broadly, the Korean national team set up ahead of this very important World Cup tie. And so let's get right into it. First from Lionel, and let's try to keep our answers brief because we have a few and we should get to all of them and not make this podcast drag on for an hour. For sure. So let's go. Lionel asks, can anyone talk about the role of the assistant coaches for Team Korea? Does Shin Tae-yong rely on anyone else other than himself? Rory had very strong opinions about this.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. We're going to go on the evidence that is presented. When Shin Tae-yong listened to his coach, it was widely believed that that happened during the Colombia match back in November. It was a fantastic win. It was very surprising because... You know, Korea was in really bad form up to that point. And I think it shocked a lot of people that you know, really tuned into that match and really paid attention to that. Enough so that there, you know, I think there's a new, I can't remember, somebody on Twitter is now this premier video tactician and used that particular match as one of his prime examples of how to play the 4-4-2 correctly against a team like Colombia. And the long story short is the narrative that's being developed is that Shin Tae-yong is, I think, trying to get away from his minders. The Spanish coaches were hired to help him with his tactics. And I think Shin Tae-yong, on some level, it would appear that he is trying to get out of the shackles of that and say he's his own man, and thus we see the 3-5-2 come into play. When he's not listening, you know, we're seeing the results of that. So it's just interesting. I mean, we're just going on sort of like the anecdotal evidence that's happening, but it would strongly suggest that I think there is some tug of war that's happening. And I'm saying that diplomatically. We're not exactly sure to what degree they are in sync and to what degree Shin Tae-yong is actually has, with the Spanish coaches in particular, have you know, influence over Shin Tae-yong. But I think, you know, this is sort of the paradigm that's happening right now. Yet to be played out is how much Shin Tae-yong is really going to, at the end of the day, against Sweden, going to really take in their input.
Michael and Jinsuk, open question for you both. Sorry, I think I cut you off, Roy. My bad.
No, you're good.
So Shin Tae-yong, of course, There is speculation that he felt alienated and isolated by Uli Stielike when he was his assistant coach. Do you buy the theory that he's now doing the same to his Spanish coaches?
I personally think so. If you remember back in Colombia, the Colombia match back in 2014.
Junsuk, you got to repeat that louder. Can't hear you. Sorry about that.
Sorry, yeah, okay, we can edit this out.
Sure.
So if you remember back in Colombia, back in 2017, Shin Tae-yong, he kind of took credit for Otani Grande's decision to put Koyohan in the 4-4-2. That's the evidence one. Evidence number two is if you look at all of Grande's interviews recently, he looks extremely stressed. I'm extremely frustrated. He comes across as someone who's like just not having a great time. And to that extent, I think it must be his frustration, you know, from Shin Tae-yong never, you know, wanting to do his own thing. Tinkering has always been Shin Tae-yong's thing, right? And Grande knows what works. He probably has his own ideas, and from time and time again we see Shin Tae-yong's ideas working in not Grande's, which makes me think that Shin Tae-yong is giving, you know, Grande the treatment.
And Michael, do you want to speak more specifically to like what Grande does versus what Espin does versus the other coach does? Or?
So Grande was sort of brought in as the tactical coach, and then the other two Spanish guys are more based on the fitness side, and I actually think that on the fitness side, like, they could probably be really useful, but I think that definitely, yeah, you could see a lot of Shin Tae-yong just wanting to try his tactics out and see if they work. And you could imagine that Tony Grande is, you know, in the video room saying, this isn't working, and feeling frustrated about that.
I hate to put this into, this kind of analogy, but one could maybe make the argument that Shin Tae-yong is akin to Donald Trump. And that Tony Grande is the the John Kelly role, and you know Trump doesn't want to listen and goes, you know, goes rogue. That's sort of what I that analogy just comes right to my head when I think about this arrangement. You know,
it's a little treat for our political followers. I would, again, play devil's advocate. Like I do think that Shin Tae-yong is a stubborn guy who wants to, like, this is his turn, you know, like, he was really clear when the hitting saga happened, like, this is my turn, I'm going to the World Cup, I'm the coach. He was not going to relinquish that mantle to hitting, no matter his status. I do think that Shin Tae-yong does have, like, lots of qualities that we really, you know, we lavish praise on him when he was Stielike's assistant coach, because, like, he knew the players well, he was probably more willing to tinker a little bit tactically with this side, which was perhaps needed in the very sterile 4-2-3-1 U-shaped passing under Stielike. I think what Grande's role may be, we're going to see this obviously in the game, in the games to come, and make a judgment call on this, but I think Grande's role is to kind of like rein in Shin Tae-yong a little bit and like be like, okay, that's a good idea, but does it actually work? Because Shin Tae-yong, it seems to be the other extreme of Stielike. And there was no happy medium between the two. And I think Grande's job is just to bring his experience and wealth of knowledge to help an inexperienced manager on a senior team level and sustain that. But obviously Shin Tae-yong, because of the power dynamic, wants to remain like the front man making the decisions as the manager. And I think that's fair. And I think that we hired a domestic coach, so he should be making the calls. And it's good to have domestic managers. I do agree that Shin Tae-yong is very, very far from being a complete manager. But I want to take his side, although he makes it really hard for me to, but I want to take his side sometimes, because a lot of the foreign media likes to say he's some crazy cuckoo guy. He's not. He's just more willing to experiment and innovate than other managers that are at the World Cup. He's different. He's not stupid. But yeah, that's my take on that situation. Maybe we should move to the next question. Glenn asks, what are the chances we stick to a compact 4-4-2? We kind of discussed this earlier, but we can touch on it again. Let's give the first turn to Jensek this time.
I think all media comments are pointing to 3-back against Sweden and 4-back against Everard. Yeah, huh. So, I mean, have you read anything different? Because it seems like the 3-back is going to happen.
I see. I haven't been out of loops. I don't know.
In Korean media, that's the theory going around right now.
I see. Michael, do you think we stick to 4-4-2 against 4-4-2 versus 4-4-2?
I hope so.
do you think having a compact 4-4-2, like narrowing, like, do you think that makes sense against the Swedish side that, you know?
I think that, like, when we play 4 at the back and sort of get our spacing right, sort of play very organized, we play better. So I think that that's what we should try to play. And Kim Yong-gwan and Jang Hyun-soo, like, they can be physical when they want to be. They can sort of go into aerial battles when they want to. So I don't think that it would, you know, cause them a lot of problems to have to battle with Toivonen and Berg. So they should, you know, give that a shot and sort of just get stuck in on it.
Roy, I guess at any level of length or not.
No, I think, you know, I agree with what Michael said, but also, you know, it sounds like it's not out of the realm of possibility that the 3-5-2 could be effective against Sweden, seeing how defensive minded they are and how ineffectual they've been offensively. So, you know, we'll see on Monday, but, you know, that, yeah, 3-5-2, 4-4-2, those are the only things that we've seen so far. I'd be surprised if there's anything else, like 4-1-4-1.
Marcy is our plant's resident.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
No worries, go for it. Continue, Roy, no worries about that.
No,
I think it came up on the Soccerway site.
Okay.
that's a good end to my
Oh my gosh. No worries. I was trying to read Yong's, like, because Yong gave an interesting quote. It said, "Against Sweden, this is courtesy of Steve Han. Against Sweden, we have a detailed plan on how we'll line up defensively as a team. My marker Forsberg drifts in and plays centrally. I'm going to attack the space he leaves. If I have to man mark him, I feel confident about that too." So attacking the space he leaves sounded really 3-5-2-ish because he's the wing back, right? And so Forsberg will come up and move centrally, and no one really plugs the hole in left midfield. It's perfect space for Yong. Then if I have to man mark him, I feel confident about that too. Man marking Forsberg sounds kind of 4-4-2-ish. Like, why would a wing back follow a player centrally? Like, who's gonna, is Chung Woo-young gonna slip into right back position? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to understand all the quotes from training camp. Basically, what I'm saying is I have no clue. I think it's 50-50.
Well, like, that sort of, like, kind of plays into, like, the shape is gonna look like 3-5-2 on offense, and on defense it's gonna look like 4-4-2.
That's possible. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. And tactics are so fluid these days anyways, and you could argue that our 4-4-2 does look like a 3-5-2 because Chung Woo-young or Ki Sung-young would drop between the center backs to pick up the ball. That's a 3-5-2, essentially. Alright, so let's move to Joshua Kim. What is all this trick nonsense coming from Shin Tae-young? I had a lot of fun with this on Twitter the other day, but I'll let somebody else have the first bite. Michael, it's Michael's turn. Had the first bite at the apple. What is all this trick stuff coming from Shin Tae-young?
So, I mean, I talked about this when I wrote about it in the Senegal recap. Mm. I think that, like, the trick nonsense is, like, he's gotten in his head. Like, he wants to seem like he's, you know, like, just setting up this elaborate plan where they're going to, you know, like, play these tactics in the friendlies, and Sweden's going to be so prepared for that. And then at the actual match, they come up with something totally different, and Sweden is caught off guard, and all these things, right? Mm-hmm. But what's ended up happening is, like, the trick tactics haven't really looked good either, and then, like, everybody's frustrated, and I think he's just getting in his head. Like, he's trying so hard to, like, outsmart these guys, he's outsmarting himself. Like, he just—he should just relax, go back to what's worked, and just tell his players to put it all out there, and it's going to work. But if he thinks that he's just going to, like, play mind games with these guys, I don't think that that's going to help him at all.
Shin Tae-yong does have this propensity to play these weird, strange mind games. And Sweden, I think, is messing with him, too. Because he was super paranoid about Sweden watching the Senegal friendly. Remember that? He was like, I'm so sure that the videos will be leaked to Sweden. And like, there were Snapchats on Twitter from the game. Like, of course they were leaked to Sweden. Like, you can't play a closed door friendly in this era. The only thing you can get were like player, like the full match video and highlights. But there were like Snapchats on Twitter.
The most hilarious thing was Steve Hahn reported this too, with the Swedish scout said,
yeah,
I was trying to get into the game, but you know, they didn't let me in, but I went to somebody's house and watched the whole game from their rooftop.
it's a classic thing everyone does. Everyone can find a nearby house.
It's like, hey, can I watch the game from your attic? Okay, from your roof? Okay, sure.
So goes the close friendly. Jesus.
Anyway, and then Shin Tae-yong was like, I can't show everything in this match because I know there's a spy out there. Then, if you're never going to practice it, it's not going to work. So anyway, that was a trick nonsense. We're kind of close for time, so if you want more details, feel free to... We'll give you a more elaborate answer on Patreon to the person who asked that question. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's Shin Tae-yong playing these weird mind games, saying that everything that's gone wrong is a trick. And the Korean media bought it at some point. There's like headlines saying like, if this was just a trick, Korean football is still strong. I'm like, are we really like reflecting on the state of Korean football based on a friendly against Bolivia in Austria with a completely depleted Korean team against a Bolivian C team? Like, there's nothing in that match that mattered, in my opinion. So anyway, we will see if trick football works. And if it doesn't, well, my fantasy team's called It's Just a Trick, so hopefully that version of trick football at least will work.
bravo. Yes.
All right. Which player, asks Dan, which player has impressed you the most? No, sorry, I skipped one. We'll go to David first. Has Lee Young guaranteed his starting place for the first game? Jinsucker Roy, you want to go out to have that one?
Lee Young.
Has Lee Young guaranteed his place for this first game?
Can someone update me on the injury situation?
So,
gash on his head. That's about it.
Gash on his head. I think he sounds okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard from Steve that he's participating in full training.
Mm-hmm, okay. In that case, then yes, I think Young is going to be played on the right back position, especially because Ko Yohan is such a utility player, and Shin Tae-yong favors Young over Ko Yohan, it seems.
And, of course, Lee Young just gave that quote I just quoted earlier, where he's, like, talking about marking fresh work. Unless that's a trick, too. Unless this trick tactics expanded to, like, giving from the players. It's like Hector Cooperin saying, I'm going to start Mo Salah all over again when Salah's just on the back.
There are so many permutations to this. I would love for if Shin Tae-yong could ever improve his, coaching acumen and make it, you know, hypothetically to the Premier League, he would be a different version of Mourinho.
Well, he'd be a personality for sure. For nothing.
Is he really called that?
Unfortunately, yes.
In informed mainstream press, though he bears more of a resemblance to Joachim Löw, so not in tactics, but in like face.
That's enough said for me. Then.
Okay, I feel like we're getting pretty tired.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
So yes, I think Young's guarantee his place for his first game. As a right wing back or right back, it seems like Shin Tae-yong trusts Young, has World Cup experience. Like, he hasn't done anything incredible, but like, you know, he's okay. And in any case, Sweden is so compact, we're going to cross the ball into the box anyway. Inevitably, Wookiee or no Wookiee, we're still playing crosses. Ko Yohan can't really cross the ball. He can move centrally a little bit. Like, I think theoretically, Kohan's a better player for this game. I think in practice, Shin Tae-yong trusts Lee Young more, and I'm okay with it.
I would love to see Ko Yohan DM for this game.
That could be interesting. I think some people have suggested that. I've thought about it. But then again, it's kind of hard to think about. Like, it's hard to find a way for one player to mark Forsberg, because Forsberg pops up everywhere. So Koyan just follows Forsberg everywhere. Like, he'll leave a gaping big hole in midfield.
He was. I mean, James was also everywhere. I think he started right left wing.
Yeah.
That's right. He was on Gojohan. My understanding was he was on James.
True. We'll have to see.
Another trick.
Yeah, imagine that. Like,
there's so many permutations for this.
We're not playing one right back. We're playing two right backs. And all this talk about Chung Woo-young Wing's second ball, it doesn't matter. It's Gojohan. But I think that's why. Because Gojohan will get outmuscled in those kind of gritty battles. All right, last question. Which player has impressed you the most during the pre-World Cup friendlies? Again, let's keep this quick because the tavern producer is like yelling at me through the glass window. Michael Welch, you can go first.
I am going to talk about the Ju Sejong hype train. There is not anyone on this hype train with me, but I'm riding it.
I'm kidding.
I like his through ball vision. In that game against Honduras, he had good vision on the through ball, and he made really good passes. And I think that, like, what you see Ki Sung-young, like, do is, like, he spreads the play with just wide balls. They're just ridiculously accurate. But if you pair that with someone who can pick the ball up centrally and then, like, make a through ball or make a really incisive pass to Isumu or Son Heung-min, I think that that's a great combination. And that's the one midfield combination I'm really hoping to see.
Roy, who do you think?
Lee Sung-woo for me, only because, you know, when particularly against Honduras, you know, nobody knew exactly how this would pan out, and it was way above even my expectations. I was very pleased, and you know, that's I speak for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are very stoked to see how he would do, you know, overall. Here's one quick take on what success for Korea could look like. It's not even making it out of this round of making it to the round of 16. It's some individual players like Lee Sung-woo really you know, breaking through. So he's got a good performance, and that in essence could be, you know, oddly enough, a weird definition of you know, success.
Jin-suk, player who missed the most during pre-World Cup friendlies.
It seems like it's fate. Of course, Lee Sung-woo.
Yeah.
Definitely the breakout star of this World Cup saga.
Mm-hmm. All right. I concur on Ju Sejong. I also concur on Lee Sung-woo. I don't know if Lee Jae-sung impressed me the most, because he had one really good game against Bosnia when everyone else sucked. But because we have mentioned him, I'll go for him. I think Lee Jae-sung, whether he plays out on the left side or he comes in centrally in a 3-5-2, he has to start. He has to start. I can't stress this enough. He's got to start the game.
Yeah.
And that goal against Bosnia just gave so much hope that in a team of players running around who haven't always been clutch, Sonnyman is at times, but like, there's a lot of unproven players and unproven systems. A comforting thing is just seeing Lee Jae-sung like work his mastery and score a really good finish that he's seen him do so many times in the domestic league. It's just really good to know that even if Kwon Chung-won is injured, you still have one player who can be really clutch in the right moment and make the team tick at the same time. Lee Jae-sung impressed me a lot, and I really hope that he can continue to impress the scouts and make a big move to Europe. Those are the five questions we got from patrons, so thank you very much for the questions. It was our pleasure to answer them. If you want to get on the act, of course, you can make a donation to our Patreon at patreon.com/takeookwarriors. We'll be infinitely grateful for your support. Tavern Last Call, again, we'll make it quick. Your edgy general thoughts and also your edgy prediction for the World Cup, as well as who you think is going to win. We can start with, we'll go for seniority, so we're starting with Mr. Roy.
All right, make this quick. And I've said about low expectations. I'm going to elaborate again, and it's going to echo what I said 4 years ago. I found out that, according to some, the definition of happiness is low expectations, paired with if those low expectations end up, you have a better result than you expected. One could say that is a definition of happiness. And this is the Korea team's potential. If they are able to just not to put too much pressure on themselves. Hwang Yi-chan, able to not rush his dribbling and get some good clean touches in. Get a chemistry going. I think there is potential that they can get out of this group. It's not a sure thing. The low expectations is something they've earned over a long course of time. It's well deserved, but I think that still there are some elements of this team, some particular personnel that really could be difference makers. So I'm just keeping my eyes wide open.
All right, who's going to win the World Cup, and edge prediction, Mr. Roy?
Quick. World Cup, I'm going to say Argentina, only because it feels like the force of momentum for Messi, the cosmos is just behind Messi for some reason this year.
And do you have any hot take, anything to put yourself out there about this World Cup?
Something really controversial.
Yeah.
Jesus. Russia, despite a 5-0 win to open the World Cup, is going to crash spectacularly.
Ooh.
And it's going to be awesome.
All right. Jinsuk, last call, perhaps slightly more brief, and those two predictions as well.
I would say I highly, highly doubt Korea will even get one win. I honestly don't see that happening. So that is my prediction for Korea. I'm sorry, everyone. I think we'll score goals, but I don't think we'll win. Mm. So there's that. An edgy prediction. I think Iran will make the round of 16, with this lucky own goal, they can make it.
Yeah.
This changes everything. It changes everything. Anyway, so that's my edgy prediction, and it's also Tim's. And my ultimate winner is Brazil.
Okay, nice. Michael?
In terms of last call, I'm just excited for it to be Monday.
Yeah.
I'm ready for us to get going. I want to see what happens, and I'll just be along for the ride. Edgy prediction. We're not going to enjoy Fox's coverage of this World Cup. That's my edgy prediction. I don't think we're going to like it. We're going to wish for ESPN back, and... you know, we're going to be stuck with them for, you know, the next three World Cups.
It's already happened. It's already happened. I have already not enjoyed the coverage.
What's his name? Alexi Lalas?
Lalas, yeah.
I've heard nothing but bad things about him. Like, is he...
Lalas is an idiot.
He's
an idiot. He's really bad.
Oh, dear.
Oh my God.
He's like the embodiment of, like, American, like, just, you know, like, chauvin, like, just that... like, we're American, we know what we're talking about type of thing.
Uh-huh.
No one I dislike more in sports punditry.
Ouch. Bullshit.
Okay. Who's winning the World Cup?
I'm going to go with Roy. I'm going to say it's going to be Argentina.
I see. Cool. All right.
I think it's time for Messi to claim the title of greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. My last call, keep it short. Looking forward to the World Cup. I don't my edgy prediction, since Jinsuk stole my Iran one, my edgy optimistic prediction for Korea is that we draw Iran. Yes, we draw Sweden 0-0, but we beat Mexico. I think we're gonna do the opposite of what people expect. I think we have a better chance of beating Mexico than beating.
Interesting.
Sweden. But I'm not like, don't put my name to that. Like, it's just like, I think we have a better chance of beating, like, in a world where Korea elevates their game. And as to who is going to win the World Cup, I am sticking to Germany. I think they're a tournament team built by a really great manager, and Timo Werner is a really good player, and I think Müller always comes up to form in the World Cup. They just have all the pieces, and a pretty good group as well they can advance from. Yeah, I like Germany. All right, so that is it for this Tavern podcast, this Korean football podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the Sweden match, and we'll be right there after the game to analyze what went right and what went wrong post-match. Thank you so much for joining us, and from all of us here at the various Tavern studios, 잘 가요.
잘 가요.